Hello there! AIPT Comics Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. Fellas, are you prepared to unveil your summer bod? Manscaped is here to ensure your post-quarantine body is ready for the wild. Don't be the guy at the beach with a bear rug on your chest. And if you grew some quarantine man boobies, the least you could do is make sure they're hairless. So Manscaped were gracious enough to send us their product. Both Forrest and I had never tried it, but we've seen a lot of their ads. And obviously we're tantalized and we've used it, and it's a great product.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's amazing that their main razor right now is called Lawnmower 3.0, because I landscaped for 15 years. Yeah, I don't know if you guys know that. And it makes me sound really old, but I started when I was 11. Okay. And we didn't have products like this. We didn't have the crop cleanser to keep your hair and skin feeling healthy and fresh, okay? We didn't have the crop reviver, a testy toner, as they say. It's designed to give you a pep in your step. No, I needed a pep in my step when I was landscaping. It was so hot. It's going to be 95 degrees in Boston on Sunday, and that's why I'm grateful for Manscaped. Now, if you want to be grateful like me, you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code AIPT20, and just go to manscaped.com, put in your order, put in AIPT20, and you get 20% off free shipping. It's a good deal. Use the code AIPT20. Trim your chesticles with the besticles. Hello and welcome to AIPT Comics Podcast, the number one comics podcast on AIPTcomics.com. My name is David Brook. I am your co-host. We are on episode 81. Forrest, how do you feel today?
I feel good.
Forrest is the other co-host, because when you say co, it means two, I think. Is that math? I don't know. I'm terrible at it. So this week, we have Jeremy Holt and Elizabeth Beals on later on the show to talk about Virtually Yours, a new Comixology Originals OGN that came out just this week. We get into the nitty-gritty of the series. It's a comic book about a dating app, but there's a lot more to it, really fleshed out characters. There's a bit of romance. If you hang on to the end, near the end of the show, you'll get to the interview, and we'll talk about that. Before we do, we dive into the news, the top news of the week. So let's get through it. Warren Ellis' accusers are launching a website detailing victim experiences, and the website is
somanyofus.com. SOMANYOFUS.com. There is a frequently asked questions section where they explain a long history of abuse from Warren Ellis. They talk about why these women, particularly women, have come together to share their experiences about Warren Ellis's abuse, which we've touched on previous shows. They have a contact for media questions, as well as to get in touch and to share your own testimonial. They have resources and recovery efforts that they're linking to, which I think is really fantastic for victims of emotional and sexual harassment and assault. And then they also have quite a few testimonials from both anonymous and named accusers. And right now there are 37, and then a visual timeline of the times over the years that Ellis has abused people.
This is really cool, even though it's a terrible thing.
Right? Yeah, I take what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, so often people go to the internet and complain one way or the other, or I'm not saying any of the victims are, I'm saying just like people in general. I saw people this week saying, oh, what did Warren Ellis do? Tell me what he did. Show me the bodies or whatever.
Right.
And this is a very proactive way to get the word out, to inform people of what's going on and what's happened in the past, and also do it in an anonymous way to protect the victims.
Mm-hmm. I also really appreciate that they obviously led with a centralized place to share resources for recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And then also to kind of share a community, albeit a community revolving around a very fucked up, horrible thing and person, but done so to be empathetic and to be kind.
I guess the reason why I use the word cool is I'm just like impressed with this.
I know what you mean. It's the best possible thing maybe that could come out of this kind of thing.
Right.
In that it informs people, it's concise, it's clear, and I hope that it is effective for Warren's victims to share their stories, to have him blacklisted from the community, and to find community and solidarity with each other.
I wonder if this will be a model others will use in the future.
Yeah, probably.
So that's somanyofus.com.
Yes.
Go check that out. Next up in the news, Marvel and Reed Pop are joining forces to launch Marvel Made, I'm going to use quotes, high-end collectibles store.
Yeah.
So this is a positive slash negative capitalism news, I would say.
It's weird. It's real weird. $200 collection of Scotty Young pins.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like pins that much, so I didn't see any value in this. But I do see the value if they go and put out a really cool statue. Because, you know, I buy action figures.
Sure. Yeah. So do I.
And it is neat that they are limited.
Because
this is a limited 2,500 bundles of the Scotty Young collectors, not only pins, but also there are variant covers for Excalibur, as well as a notebook.
I think it will be interesting to see if they have safeguards in place for scalping with limited quantities.
Yes.
Marvel certainly has the resources to make sure that those safeguards are in place. But you've seen that kind of stuff move through, like, the sneakerhead community and other places, like whenever Kanye West releases a new shoe, for example. So it'll be really interesting. I don't know that these products are that desired, though they might be.
They do have a limit of two per customer, but you know they want like every comic shop to be buying a couple of these.
Right, right, yeah. I've seen both sides of this. I'm real stoked for people that like enamel pins, that like collecting. I have my fair share of them, though I don't have anything like a cork board with thousands of them like some people do. And then I also saw people jokingly rebranding it like the Marvel Thrift Store Emporium. So it really depends on the quality of products that they continue to release over time.
I would love to be inside the Loot Crate boardroom because they have like multiple Marvel themed loot crates.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Are they done? Probably not, but they could be done. Like,
I mean, Loot Crate has not, I don't know that any Loot Crates have actually been tangibly successful.
Right.
And I think a lot of people are waking up to that, so this could be Marvel moving away from that space. I'm sure that Repop also really wants to recoup some expenses after canceling pretty much all of their conventions this year, and probably next year at this rate.
Probably, yeah.
Wear your mask.
Yes, wear your mask, please. Ugh, I had the worst conversation with someone on Sunday about it, and they said I was the British and they were the Americans and it was the Revolutionary War.
Cool. Yeah. They used that literal analogy?
They did. They did. It took me a second to understand how stupid it was. Because I was like, what?
It's 2020. We both wash our asses.
I know, right?
We're past it.
One last thing about the Marvel Made, the bundle that is up for order now, there are 1,300 left, 21 days to go. There were 2,500. So I'm wondering if Marvel's a little surprised they didn't go off the shelf as fast as...
Yeah.
Because that seems slow to me.
Yeah. It makes me wonder if they'll pivot to like just having small collections of things that are desirable within a niche.
Yeah.
Or if they're going to go hard and get like Stan Lee signed comics, only 70.
Oh my God.
And try to be, you know, super lucrative.
They could, yeah. They could go really expensive. I'm sure they will, but probably generally it would probably... I mean, $200 is a lot in general.
Yeah, it is. Especially right now.
You know what there isn't a lot of? Negan comics. Robert Kirkman came out and said there will be no more plans for Walking Dead or Negan comics. This is just a week or two after there was a very special Negan comic that was in comic shops only to help drive traffic into comic shops where people aren't wearing masks.
Yes.
Let's wear your mask.
Yeah. No, I thought that was pretty cool that he went out of his way to make this Negan Lives comic.
Yeah.
Which, you know, was entirely constructed for fundraising for comic shops and for COVID relief for comic shops and artists and stuff. And I appreciate that he used the IP in that way. I also appreciate that he's not going to oversaturate us with those kinds of things.
Right.
Good on him.
Right. He's done for now.
Yeah.
But he said he was done like a year ago too, so he does consistently help comic shops with the way that Image Comics lets comic shops read ahead into a story arc so they can kind of sell the book better. Obviously there's other things that they give comic shops to help draw traffic in, so it's cool that it's on his mind, because I'm not sure it's on the mind of every publisher head.
Yeah, I don't think it's on the minds of publishers as much as it is on the minds of artists and creators themselves, such as Jim Lee doing all of those charity sketches and quite a few that were done for other charities and stuff. It's cool. It's cool to see the community come together this way in around a horrible thing the same way it is for Ellis, you know.
There's positivity found everywhere.
Yeah.
Maybe not, though, if you hate Watchmen.
I mean, okay.
So, yeah, the next bit of news is DC Comics has revealed that there will be a Rorschach maxi-series, 12-issue maxi-series, coming from Tom King and Jorge Fornes. It starts in October. It's simply called Rorschach, and it is under the DC Black Label name, DC Black Label. So basically, it's not in continuity, right? We know that DC Black Label is kind of its own thing, so that you can kind of do whatever you want. And it also takes place 35 years after Ozymandias blasted Rorschach and all of New York.
Yes.
So, very strong reactions on Twitter, I noticed.
Yes, quite a few. I mean, I think people had strong reactions to the show as well, positive and negative.
Sure.
And I think that there will be similar reactions to this book when it comes out as well. Tom King certainly has his fans as well as his detractors.
Mm-hmm.
I personally find this exhausting.
Yeah.
Okay. And on the same side of the coin, on the other side of the coin,
yeah.
I know why DC is doing this.
To make money?
I mean, Watchmen sold better than everything but their YA trades last year.
Right. Yeah, the HBO show, in my opinion, was very good. Had a strong message. It definitely wasn't the perfect show, but it was fascinating to me that Tom King evoked the show in the quote that was sent to press in the press release, because it's kind of fascinating to me. Like, you know, for decades now, there were the prequel comics, there were other instances, like, you know, Jeff Johns with Doomsday Clock, where people evoked Alan Moore's Watchmen. No, now we've got a creator evoking an HBO spinoff show that was technically a sequel to the original comic
and was
series.
Never really marketed as a DC product,
right? Yeah,
yeah.
Probably because the DC execs were like, let's just stay away from it.
Yeah, probably.
I'm honestly, I kind of dug some of the prequel comic. God, how many years ago was that now? Like 10?
I feel like it was like 6.
I liked some of them. Some of them were definitely kind of flops, but I'm not opposed to this idea, especially, and I want to say this, especially because it's not in continuity. It's DC Black Label. So.
Sure. I mean, there are Watchmen stories that are in continuity right now.
Right.
We'll probably talk about those later.
So I'm game to check it out, but I get the idea. I mean, just Doomsday Clock was not great. And to follow it up with another one a year later, that's a bold move, Cotton.
Yeah, I think they're going to keep trying until one of them really catches.
You're right. Probably, yeah. Next up, Marvel has revealed that a new event is coming in the fall 2020. It's called Dark Ages. It's by Tom Taylor. And it was revealed in the Free Comic Book Day X-Men comic. It is also drawn by Eben Coelho. And there's basically about 4 pages of story in that about this Dark Ages book. Again, I'm shocked that Marvel keeps announcing events while an event just started. They can't help themselves, huh?
Mm-hmm. This is a non-continuity book.
Yes, that's the biggest
and
deal.
And Tom Taylor tweeted out, "Hey, Marvel fans, we have a new comic out this week for Free Comic Book Day, and it ends with the lights out. Or the lights going out, announcing Dark Ages. Can't say much about this yet, but the schedule has changed a little, and it's not in continuity. That's right, I'm being unleashed on the Marvel Universe." I think he's intentionally kind of evoking, you know, Injustice.
Right.
There. I've seen a lot of speculation that this is going to be Marvel's Deceased, or that this is going to be Marvel's Injustice, and I get a very, from the logo treatment at least, I think it's going to be more like a medieval
thing. I would say so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, certainly Dark Ages would lead you to think so.
It's the story he does tell in that Free Book Comic Book Day book is bold. Can I spoil it? I'll spoil it.
Yeah.
Iron Man gets his leg ripped off and the power in his suit goes out. So he's not only rendered powerless, but also limbless. And he's in a very weak state when this event will probably start. I'm all for it. I mean, come on. Tom Taylor's nailed so many stories.
Yeah. Hey, he's a workhorse.
Yeah, I know, right? How many ideas does this guy have?
Yeah. I mean, some are certainly a little recursive, but I'm happy for him. I like his products, and I think that they're also not actively harmful if you don't want to read them.
Sure.
He's not messing around with people's continuity, and especially not in this case.
It's almost like there was this, I forget what it was. It was like a skit or something where people kept going, oh, it was a Ricky Gervais show. And they kept going, oh, you can't say that. It's offensive. And they kept going, well, why does he get away with it? And I keep thinking about that with Tom Taylor. Like, why does he get to just play with the toys without worrying about why? Like, there are so many creators that could easily, well, not easily necessarily, but like go and create these non-continuity stories and go bananas. But, you know, Tom Taylor gets to keep doing it.
Marketability.
Oh, you're right. Damn it. It's all about sell.
He's found his niche and he's going to run with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I commend him. Get your money.
Nice guy. I met him last year at San Diego Comic Con. I asked some of your questions.
Yes, he insulted one of them. I remember.
I forget that one. I'm sorry. Was it my fault? It was the way I delivered it, I'm sure.
I'm certain it was my two-paragraph question.
Next to the news, Second Coming, the sequel, is coming.
Second Coming squared. Second Coming.
December 16th, 2020, the sequel to Second Coming at Ahoy Comics.
Neat.
Mark you Russell, know? Richard Patchy, Leonard Kirk, all doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, neat. They looked for a long time for that book to find the right place. And I'm glad that they found it, and I'm glad that Mark Russell gets to do his thing.
For sure, for sure. And he tells, I think, very human stories that are relatable and can teach people things. You know what? There actually is a lesson to be learned in our next bit of news. NBC Universal is launching a comic book company with Grant Morrison on their first title. And I think they might learn the hard way. This is insane.
I mean, it will certainly be lucrative within a certain niche, I think. This is a comics company called Universal Content Productions, UCP.
Wow, that really just rolls off the tongue.
And they are leading with a Grant Morrison book. I don't know that the folks at NBC know what they're getting into by leading with a Grant Morrison book, especially if he's getting to dictate continuity and characters and universe and thematics and all those sorts of things that are very often done in his peculiar way.
Mm-hmm.
But Grant Morrison certainly has his fans.
He does. He does. I'll be curious to see if it's more of a standard superhero fare or if it's something more out there, acid trippy, weird.
Yeah. I mean, he revels in getting to work with licensed characters that already exist.
Yeah.
And kind of turning them on their heads or making dark inversions of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not going to be able to do that here unless it's in a very pastiche type way, like Black Hammer might be.
Right.
So I'm interested. I'm interested to see what it is. I'm also interested to see how quickly NBC fast tracks it to other IPs
or
to other mediums, because they are essentially using comics as a IP farm, which is happening more and more.
That was my first thought. They feel jealous that Warner and Disney have these IP farms. Let's get our own.
Yeah. Doom Patrol's popular. People talk about that All-Star Superman.
Let's get our own Doom Patrol. We'll call it Gloom Patrol.
I want to hear what the pitch to Grant Morrison was like.
It says here that, this is from Newsarama, by the way. It says, Games Radar, that Boom Studios, Boom Studios is also involved in the deal. So somehow they're talent acquisition or something.
Yeah. Interesting.
Oh, dude, on Netflix, on Twitter, it says there's a new bit of news about this. They just signed ICP to be their second team of writers for the UCP. ICP being Insane Clown Posse.
Is this a real thing?
And this is a joke.
Oh, I was like, what?
I wish I could have done the music.
I mean, ICP is cool.
It's about magnets and how they work.
Oh.
In our next bit of news...
I support the Juggalo movement.
No, yeah, they've done great
printed
things.
And sold thousands of copies of a t-shirt with the Confederate flag on fire that says fuck your rebel flag.
For sure, yeah.
I love them and support them. They may not know how magnets work, however.
That magnet thing is just, it's look it up.
I do take your point that ICP starting a book with NBC is pretty much on the same page as Grant Morrison doing it, though.
I mean, it makes so much sense. Like, ICP, yeah. UCP. In our next bit of news, Usagi Yojimbo is getting a CG television series on Netflix. James Wan, who is the director of Aquaman, and Stan Sakai are producing along with some other folks. This is in production. It's greenlit. I mean, does Netflix even like consider ideas, or do they just greenlit everything?
I mean, they greenlit at least one season of a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that's
content
true.
Content farming.
Oh, it's going to be called Samurai Rabbit, the Usagi Chronicles.
I hope that this is traditionally animated and not that weird CG stuff that they've been doing for anime lately. Like, most of the Netflix original anime looks terrible.
Right.
And Yojimbo does not deserve that kind of treatment. It's a fantastic book. I hope that it gets treated well. I think it will probably be really successful if it is treated well.
You know, I love this news just because, you know, Stan's, you know, obviously had a lot of success with the character through the Ninja Turtles, I would say. Obviously, it's great on its own, but like with the Ninja Turtles show and the action figure, like the character became more well-renowned. Now it gets its own show, its own stamp. It doesn't have to be stuffed into a Ninja Turtles cartoon. And Stan deserves it. The guy's been around forever and he's an amazing talent. Also, lots of amazing talents involved with Ten of Swords. Sorry, what was yours?
Key of Swords.
Key of Swords.
Cross of Swords.
If you're a Twitter user, on Thursday you noticed that a creator would tweet the picture of the cover of the book they're going to be writing or drawing throughout the day.
And they all kept format except Gary Dugan.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, and if you even try to like look up, you know, X of Swords hashtag, it won't come up for him. I was actually newsing all of these, and amazing. It was also funny. I don't know who messed up, but like 8 came before 7, and then like,
yeah,
and I was like, oh, somebody messed. I wonder if someone went too soon or too late. Yeah, so it was. I thought it was a very clever marketing move because it utilized all these creators of own followers to push out the content, get everybody speculating and thinking about it.
And the introduction of the new villains for the Dawn of X book, or more particularly the Cross of Swords book, the Sword Bearers of Araco has been my Twitter feed for the entire day. There are numerous Pog fan accounts that I follow already.
Yes, a giant alligator dude.
Giant alligator man.
Yeah.
Several others that are named, including Death, and one central character that is classified. I hope that they're getting into some weird timey-wimey parallel universe shit, because Araco is, what do you call it when a word can be spelled another way?
An anagram?
Of Krakoa, yes.
Oh, I didn't see that. That's interesting.
Yes, so that would be very interesting. They got their hooks in me. I think that they've got their hooks in quite a few comics fans right now.
They just keep putting in new hooks.
Yeah, and it's such quality stuff. They seem to be having so much fun writing and drawing it, too.
Yeah, I saw Benjamin Percy tweet something about how like they're opening a new door, which makes it sound like you just said, like they're opening a whole another universe into the Marvel Universe, maybe.
Yeah.
Since they are all Egyptian-themed, or not all of them, but some of them, it makes you think maybe they're connected to the Apocalypse character.
Yes, I think that, well, and also there was a solicit that said specifically that Apocalypse was twisting a certain character's arms into performing a ritual, so he may be revealed as a villain sooner than later. Not that he hasn't spent most of his comics continuity as a villain anyway.
Right. I like the name Red Root the Forest. I want to go by Brooke the
it's
David.
It's all such high concept weird shit.
Right.
I like it a lot. It looks good. It reads well. It seems genuinely new. Nothing but good things to say about it.
So all of these X of Swords, Ten of Swords covers and this final book, which is called Ten of Swords, Stasis number one, they represent chapters 3-11 of a 22 chapter event. And all of these books come out in October. Marvel is very good at revealing little snippets of things before they put out their full solicitations, which will likely come out next Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that because this is slated for October, it was obviously pushed back. I think Jordan D. White and Jonathan Hickman have done a really good job of protecting this line. Mm-hmm. So we probably won't see as many things gutted as like we did with all of the Empire tie-ins.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there's more time to like get it all set up, and it's kind of become their cash cow.
It kind of seems like they're anticipating October is when comics will be back in full force.
Right. Yeah, I would say hopefully.
Yeah.
Wear your mask. And our next two bits of news, we have two new series that Boom Studios has launched or are launching. They announced. One of them is called Origins, a sci-fi epic that's coming out in November. And the other is a Keanu Reeves co-written, yes, that's right, Keanu Reeves from The Matrix, a co-written book called, well, it doesn't have any vowels, but I'm going to try to pronounce it, Berserker, number one. And that comes out in October. It's actually funny, that book's main character is called Berserker, I think. Let me double check. Berserker, yeah. He is a half-mortal, half-god, cursed and compelled to violence. So it's kind of like a John Wick, but with superhero, I guess.
sounds like something that Keanu would be interested in.
Yeah, yeah. And the character has a slight semblance to Keanu as well. Black hair, long black hair, and a beard.
I actually thought, when I read it and correlated it with Keanu Reeves' writing, I thought that it was him.
I didn't know he was a writer.
Which I think they're obviously trying to market.
For sure, yeah. Yeah. For sure. And he actually, I think his first dip in comics was last year with Bang, which he's co-writing with Matt Kent also on this book. And I just wanted to bring up Origins because it looks super dope. Like, kind of like Princess Mononoke meets, I don't know, Akira maybe? I'm going out there with that.
Mm. It reminds me of Apocalyptic Girl, an Aria for the End Times.
Uh-huh.
It looks like that kind of world. I like that kind of high concept, straight to the point, straight to the quick sci-fi storytelling.
So it looks like plants have taken over, maybe, or just all of humanity has died and the plants have grown up. But
yeah,
with this and then with Empire, it's like plant year. It's like it's the year of plants taking over.
Yeah. I saw some negative reception on the Keanu Reeves front. I saw quite a few artists and writers say, oh, they can afford Keanu Reeves, but Boom can't afford to pay me.
Ooh, yeah.
Or they can only afford like letters getting $12 a page. That kind of stuff, which we alluded to, I think, some weeks ago on the show. Maybe that was even last week.
Yeah, it was. It was with the covers, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's certainly a problem that Boom has, and it's becoming more and more public.
Yeah.
And they're going to need to correct that.
I wonder, maybe Keanu's so rich, he's like, I'll do it for free.
I mean, I hope that he's doing his regular shtick, which is to take a huge payout and then pay all of the production staff like he did on The Matrix.
Yeah, and a lot of his money goes to, like, children hospitals and stuff, too.
He's a certified good guy.
In our last bit of news, we're going to start the news and end the news with negative news, but...
There are a series of comics review and news websites that are leading the call to drop coverage of Dynamite the Publisher after the company has been advertising Comicsgate products and specifically Indiegogo funds, fundraisers, on their Twitter account. Coupled with quite a few people that have worked with Dynamite saying that their editorial staff espouses misogynistic, hateful, sexist, and racist points of view, as well as solidarity with the Comicsgate movement. That includes this podcast as well as the AIPT website as a whole. We will not be covering Dynamite anymore, and we join people like Women Write About Comics, Comixosity, and Xavier Files in doing so.
Yes, we stand against hatred and bigotry, and if Dynamite is going to ally itself with folks that are proven to be involved in that kind of thing, then we don't need to be involved with them.
True.
In our next segment, top books of the week. We're going to talk about our top two favorite comics that came out just this week to keep you up to date and connected. Forrest, what is your second favorite comic out this week?
My second favorite comic out this week was Giant Size X-Men Magneto number 1, written by Jonathan Hickman with art by Ramon Perez. I saw some negative reception for this book on Twitter. I think that they really did exactly what they set out to do, which is that these books, these Giant Size X-Men issues, are meant to be a pretty holistic collaboration between the writer and the artist. They are meant to be artist showcases. And man, this Magneto book is gorgeous. Perez knocks it out of the park with gorgeous seascapes as Magneto and what's the mean ocean man's name? Namor. Go on.
Oh my god, strange... mean ocean man. He needs to go with that from now on. I love that.
Go on a strange but kind of episodic ocean journey. It's got some beautiful, beautiful moments. I think Hickman writes Magneto and Emma Frost by extension very well, very regally, and I had a great time with it. It was funny, it was a little serious, it sets up some new stakes for the X-Men, and I thought that it did everything that it needed to do, especially in letting Perez do what he does very well.
I love the mission statement of the series in that it is giving the artist more of a control over the story, mm-hmm. which I feel like when I'm reading Giant Size now, I'm taking in the art a little bit more than I might normally because I'm like, okay, what's the artist trying to say with an image that may otherwise have just been a transitionary panel? It's an interesting experience to read these. Second favorite book of the week was Virtually Yours by Jeremy Holt and Elizabeth Beals. They'll be on the show a little bit later. And I picked this book because I not only related with some of the character work, but also The characters are very human and real. Beals does an amazing job with the costuming. And, you know, part of me kept thinking, is this like You've Got Mail? Because it kind of follows a pattern of the characters, but the characters both don't know they're talking to each other. Not to spoil it. And then they figure out what's going on, whereas in You've Got Mail, one of them actually knows, right? Yeah, Tom Hanks knows, that bastard. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Fox Books. I'm telling you right now, we're doing a soapbox. Fox Books needs to go. No, sorry. Virtually Yours, though, just very, like, very good character development, very good character writing. They feel very real.
And it's very natural. Yeah.
And, you know, the app itself in the book is interesting, which adds a kind of a quasi-realism to it. It's like, oh, could that actually happen? And if it did, which of my friends would be using Virtually Yours? So, yeah, that's sure. Why it's my second favorite.
It's a cute book. It's a cute book that is not afraid to shy away from some very serious topics, which Jeremy elucidated on later in the show.
Yeah. It's not just a silly rom-com, for sure. There's some stuff to chew on in that. Mm-hmm. So what was your favorite book of the week?
My favorite book of the week, and it should come as no surprise, is Undone by Blood, number 4, written by Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler, with art by Sammy Cavella. This book has been fantastic. It's perfectly plotted. They're ramping up kind of the quintessential Western revenge-style storytelling. And I think we're barreling towards an explosive ending here. It's a great character-driven drama. There's a lot of violence, but there's also these nice, quieter beats of investigation. It's almost Tarantino-esque in structure, the way it shifts between characters and storytelling and realistic and then also totally ludicrous ideas. The parallels between the internal in-fiction cowboy story that's happening as well as the more modern story is very, very good. They're kind of meeting each other ahead thematically and artistically, and I appreciate that very much. This also has some great moments from Sammy and the colorist, Jason Wardy, in particular one where the main character sees someone that she thinks may have been involved in the death of her family, and you get this very dramatic up-close shot where her face is all red and scratchy as if it's covered in blood. It's very stylistically dense and impressive. I like it a lot. I'm actually hoping that we can have Lonnie and Zach on to do kind of an exit interview.
Oh, that'd be
when
fun.
When the book is done. Yeah. Just because it's really fantastic.
Yeah, Sammy, some of the layout. I mean, I'm always impressed with good layout, creative layout design, and Sammy's killed it quite a few times already.
Yeah, there's quite a few bits that really like ramp up that Clint Eastwood-esque Western-style storytelling as well. Like, in particular, in the literal Western bits, there's all these call-outs, close-ups to, like, a squinted eye or a hand on a holster or a noose. Those sorts of things. Yeah.
Wow.
R.I.P.
Oh, wait. Did we just get sued?
No, I don't.
Isn't it 8 seconds you can sing a song or whatever?
I don't know. We were providing commentary, so technically we're good.
Oh, okay, good. And it's all parody. This is the entire show is a joke. None of these opinions are factual. Just kidding. That is actually a joke. My favorite book of the week was Dark Knight's Death Metal number 2. I read the first issue, liked it, but I think I even had a heart to heart with you, Forrest, about this because I was so like, I didn't know what to think about it.
I was very warm on the first issue.
Yeah, you were.
I was positive about it,
which I was surprised about. And made me go, huh, maybe it's even better than I thought. If Forrest likes it. anyway, I put this book down and I thought to myself, this is, I think, going to be a very deep read.
Yes. I think it will be divisive too.
It's definitely divisive because it's so bonkers and out there. And something I said in my review on AIPTComics.com was, there's a saying, let go and let God. Well, in this case, Snyder and Capullo are God. You need to let go of, you know, your
preconceived.
Yeah, because they're messing around with stuff from the past. Not only the multiverse, but also Watchmen and other elements. But it's starting to feel so complex. It's almost like a Grant Morrison work, which is something I said in my review. And that when you read Grant Morrison, sometimes you feel like you have to have done some homework in order to really grasp what the hell he's doing. And that's the same with Alan Moore, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there's quite a few of one of the greatest tropes of all time about Grant Morrison is that it's actually all in the manual. Most right, of his stuff is described in interviews and not in the text.
Right.
And I could see a kind of director's cut treatment being done to these books to explain the same things to that effect.
I think one reason why a lot of people are reacting so negatively, or they're reacting in a strong way, is that it does seem like it's big and dumb and sometimes very stupid. Like, there's a T-Rex Batman. But I said this in my first review, and I probably said this when we talked about it last time on the show, is that I feel like that's all window dressing. That's hiding the fact that there's this crazy complex thing going on underneath it. Yeah. Because if you didn't have that insane window dressing, you probably would have people being a little too bored for their liking. So there's that element, that's that relationship between complexity and window dressing that I'm kind of fascinated by while I read it too. And like I said with the first issue, I think Capullo and Snyder are at the top of their game as far as creatively writing a superhero story. And it's still a superhero story, but I think it's at another level that maybe people quite aren't understanding, and they will maybe in a couple of years.
It's definitely having a metatextual conversation with editors, artists, and creators, and also the fans about the nature of events and crises and anti-crises and those sorts of things within DC's continuity. It's more Doomsday 2 than I expected, or Doomsday Clock 2 than I expected. Mm. Your mileage may vary.
Oh, for sure.
With that.
Yeah,
I will say that I find it incredibly visually impressive.
Yeah.
Capullo is amazing.
Yeah, he's at the top of it.
I really do feel like he kind of honed. I think this feels like it has finality to it. Right. In a way that, like, Last Night on Earth did not.
I wasn't a huge fan of Metal, honestly. After the first two issues, it lost me.
Yeah. And this is cohered into something much more interesting, much more quickly.
Yes, I think you're right. Yeah, that's a good point. And there's a layering. I mean, it could obviously could always just fall apart in the next issue, for all we know. So I don't want to, like, blow it up too much. We still have more issues to go. But, I'm very interested with the layering going on in there.
Yeah, I mean, the same as I said about the first issue or preceding the first issue. I just gotta know.
What's that?
I just have to know what they're aiming for, what they're angling for, how editorial is treating this as a kind of replacement to 5G, how Snyder and Capullo are treating it as kind of an exit story. I find it very interesting for a lot of reasons. But the issue itself did not work for me this time around.
Yeah, there's a lot of doubt around DC right now, especially with Dan Didio leaving and 5G probably not happening. So it's like, are they putting all their chips on this?
It seems like it.
That's
for
crazy.
Better and for worse. Yeah,
the fact that they haven't like leaned into it enough, like a lot, and said yes, this is it, makes me think that they're maybe still tentative and figuring it out.
Mm.
One thing we're not figuring out is our top books for next week. The books we're most looking forward to out next week. My top book is Lords of Empire, Emperor Hulkling, number one. It's written by Anthony Oliveira and Chip Zdarsky with art by Manuel Garcia. We actually had Oliveira on the Empire State of Mind column.
Very nice. Very nice. Insightful. Very smart.
Yeah. Very long and interesting answers.
Yes.
I think one of the biggest reasons I'm very interested in this is because of Oliveira, and I want to see how he peers into Teddy's character. I think he's also going to get into his relationship with Wiccan and where that's at, considering Teddy is manning an army outside of Earth in a spaceship that could put some trouble on the relationship for all we know. And also, yeah, just getting to that, like Hulkling's position right now is in a fascinating one. He's still young. He's still a young hero in the universe in general. He's known by everyone, but I mean, he doesn't have like this. Like, I don't think Tony Stark really knows who he is up and down. So there's a lot of development that could be happening in this issue, not, let alone the entire event. So
yeah, they're really leaning into ambiguity.
Yeah. And this Lords of Empire thing is the title is like it's on other books. There's another one about the plant dude, the Messiah. So I'm wondering if there'll be any connection between them, or maybe they mirror each other in some way, because they're both sort of about these young prince or kingly type people rising up, which could be cool. What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to Chew number one. Now, this is written by Jonathan Lehman with art by Dan Boldwood. This is a sequel, prequel, midquel to a previous series, Chew, written by Jonathan... Actually, sorry, I think it's just John Lehman.
That's right.
And this is C-H-U as opposed to C-H-E-W.
It gives me a laugh every time I say
it. Yeah, it's real good. And I don't know, actually, if it's supposed to be pronounced shoe. My apologies for not knowing. The original series was about a detective who could solve crimes by eating food, essentially. That's a very broad description. But this one is about his sister, who can learn things about people, or in particular their deceptions, by sharing a meal with them. And I do not know if this is going to be taking place at the same time as the original Chew series, or if it's a prequel, some sort of sequel. I think that it probably has some significant crossover with Chew. I really like that they're revisiting this world. I wish all the very best to John Lehman. I know he was really invested in Outer Darkness, and that was canceled by Skybound. He seemed pretty gutted by that on Twitter. I'm sure it was nice to have this ace in the pocket, because Chew is the first, one of the first comic series I was ever really, really endeared to. Indie comics, that is. And I'm really excited for this. I love that world. I'm excited to see more of it all the time.
Are they still doing the show? I forget.
I think that they are. Yeah, I think it's still in production.
That'll be delectably gross and cool. In our next segment, judging by the cover, Junior, we pick the cover art that spoke to us the most coming out next week. Forrest, what is the cover you liked the most?
I picked New Mutants number 11 with cover art by Flaviano. This features a bunch of the New Mutants characters, including Rain and Magic and a bunch of others, Chamber. They are falling, it's kind of a top-down view of them falling into a vortex, which is actually a lollipop, surrounded by candy, which is actually drugs. Magic,
what a ride.
Magic has a rubber ducky floaty on with, it's got a top hat on it. And then there's a little gummy bear that looks like the shadow bear. And there's all sorts of other references in here. It's a very bright, poppy, and fun cover that you would see in like a candy store that betrays a certain degree of darkness, actually. And, I like it. I like it a lot, just in terms of layout, in terms of execution, and thematically.
Who do you suppose is holding up the giant portal candy?
I'm curious to know if that is related to the narrative in the issue or not.
I love the what is that you call that? Wolfsbane's doing that symbol with the hands.
The hang loose.
Yeah, hang loose.
Some people like call that. It the Shaka.
Oh, Shaka, nice.
Yeah.
We both went X-Men with our covers this week.
Yes.
I picked Wolverine number 3. If you go to aftcomics.com, go to this podcast post, you can see both covers in full. I picked one of the variants by Adam Kubert and Greg Hildebrandt. This is a trippy cover. It reminds me of those glow-in-the-dark posters that kids would get.
or and at least also kids... anyone that's ever been to a head shop.
Yes, exactly. There's some really cool blues and pinks, sort of purplish pinks. Wolverine's rendered pretty cool. He's got that stocky but incredibly muscular look, and he's just like gritting his teeth while Sabretooth and some other villains are rushing at him from behind. I doubt this has anything to do with the story within, because I'm pretty sure the story not. Right now is like vampires, I think. But it's a really trippy and colorful cover. He's usually depicted as like murdering and screaming, and this one's very different for Wolverine, so that's why I picked it.
Yeah, I think that's his brain.
Oh, is that what that is?
It might be a psychological story.
Maybe he's high. Maybe he's high too, just like on your cover.
He went to one of those head shops.
Drugs everywhere.
He went to one of those head shops and saw this poster on the wall.
He did.
It's a real trip for him.
Yeah, Wolverine can't ever get high or drunk, right? Like, because his healing factor.
I mean, he drinks all the time. No, he can definitely get drunk.
He can?
Yeah.
Another thing is, like, how come Wolverine doesn't have, like, long hair all the time? Like, does he have to cut his hair five minutes?
He cuts it. I mean, Superman does too.
That'd be a funny... See, if I wrote Wolverine, it'd be the dumbest things. Like, on panel, like, 4, he'd be, like, scissoring his hair. And people would be like, why? I'd be like, well, his hair grows fast. He has a healing factor.
He's just, like, casually trimming his hair every time they go somewhere.
They're like, Wolverine, grab Cyclops. He's down. Wait one second. Funny. I've got to get the back. All right, in our next segment, our final segment, we'll be having Jeremy Holt and Elizabeth Beals on. They just came out with a book called Virtually Yours. It's on Comixology. We recommend you pick it up. I think we recommend you pick it up, right?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. I enjoyed it very much.
And yeah, stick with it. It's a cool interview, and they're both really cool people. All right, guys, so on with us is Jeremy Holt and Elizabeth Beals. You guys just came out with the Comixology Originals Virtually Yours just this week. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
I had the opportunity to read it. I have to say I was enamored with the characters, how real they were, and I loved the premise. Do you want to talk a little bit about the premise for anyone who may not know?
It's basically a story about a dating app for non-daters. Basically, people who are really not that interested in being in relationships and are more interested in their daily lives, their jobs, their careers, their friends. And this is a way to kind of stave off societal pressures.
And how did the project come together? And how long has the project been in the works?
Ooh.
Well, Elizabeth, you want to answer that?
Sure. So I met Jeremy at HeroesCon 2014, so quite a bit ago. And then in 2015, he approached me with the idea for this book. And so we've kind of just been having it in the works from there, kind of going through revisions here and there. But finally, in I think the beginning of 2019, right? That's when we kind of kicked it all off in high gear.
That's right.
And how did Virtually Yours end up at Comixology? It's one of their new Comixology Originals books. What made them feel like the right fit for this story, aside from, you know, money?
Like Elizabeth said, we've been working on this since 2015. It had two false starts with two different publishers. Originally slated as a four-part, 10-page series in Fresh Romance, which was eventually acquired by Emet Comics out in LA. And having discussions with them, they had a very particular view on where they wanted the story to go. And they wanted what I could tell was a very serious approach to the rom-com genre, as the editor's words, a dissertation on online dating. And I was like, I'm an academic. I'm not really interested in that. So I just kind of talked to Elizabeth about it, and we both didn't really want to go in that direction. So we just pulled the plug and just let it sit. And it sat for, I'd say, at least a year, maybe two, before I connected with Comixology and sent them a slew of pitches, and the rom-com is the one they wanted.
Nice. How does the artistic and creative process differ when you know a story is going to be delivered digitally?
If at all.
Yeah.
Well, definitely the file types, you have to have a certain way. And then also with Comixology, I think there's just certain guidelines you have to go by. So you can't really go too crazy, like on the page to page, but no, you still have like a lot of freedom in it and everything, but I don't know. What do you think, Jeremy?
I think it's basically the same as far as I can tell. File types is a thing, and certain resolutions, and the logo needs to be done in a very specific way, just by Comixology's own standards. But other than that, like writing the script was no different than if I was writing for print. And we definitely have aspirations to see it printed. So we definitely designed it in a way that it would work seamlessly in print.
And does Comixology help you with that process in terms of, you know, file types and logos and fonts and all that stuff? Do they have a sort of style guide that they send you?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. Okay.
Which I don't understand most of it. It's a bunch of weird jargon to me. So fortunately, Elizabeth and Adam Wallet and our designer, Tim Daniel, were able to kind of, they were able to read that language very well.
Yeah, we perused it.
Is the idea behind Virtually Yours based on any experience you guys have had with dating apps?
Yeah, 100%. This is going to date me a bit, but I've utilized just about every dating app there is in the span of about, I'd say, 15 years. I mean, all the way back to eHarmony, Match.com, OkCupid, Tinder, Hinge. I spent a lot of time when I was living in New York dating, and I ended up going on, at one point, I went on 31st dates in about 6 weeks.
Wow.
I treated it like a second job. It really informed me how dating profiles work, what works, what doesn't. So I, from that, those experiences, I crafted kind of rules of engagement on how to optimize the dating experience. So the idea of that and was really informative because I just found it incredibly exhausting. And I just thought, God, what if there was just a way to just, if someone asked, I would just have some proof. And it would just be casual, you know? And because most people are dating casually anyway, this would be really great. And then I, you know, think about a lot of my female friends as well as myself. My mom badgers me about settling down and getting married and having kids and all that. And I thought, God, wouldn't that be nice if there was a non-dating app?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, Jeremy, you keep saying things that make me think of Ava in the story. Like publishers trying to make you do something with your story you didn't want to do, your mother just now. That's so funny. I guess you write what you know, right?
Yeah, I mean, specifically, those were some of the things. On a slightly more serious note, the character of the Max's wife and that whole abusive marriage is actually lifted directly from my own personal experience of being in a physically and emotionally abusive marriage for about 3 years. So it took me a while to kind of process all of that, but deciding to write that as part of Max's character was really cathartic because I wanted to showcase the fact that men can be abused just like women. And men process it very differently because society says that, a man can't be hurt by a woman.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that was really important because I don't really see that a lot in pop culture, especially in the rom-com genre. And I was concerned that it might have been a bit too dark for rom-com. So I do appreciate that Comixology stood behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the character is so bright and positive. Like, it kind of evens it out in a sense. I've been in a physically abusive relationship before, too. And I honestly connected with that part of the story quite a bit. And you're so right. You don't ever see it from a male's perspective. So I really appreciate that you put that in there.
Oh, that's glad to hear that.
And speaking of, or kind of piggybacking off the idea of adding other elements to a traditional or quote unquote traditional meet cute romance story, did you start with the characters and then build out the app idea or vice versa?
The app idea was really kind of there, but the original story involved two white characters. And so when I was developing this with Elizabeth in 2015, I took a long, hard look at my work and realized that I was writing mostly white male heroes. And I thought, why am I doing this? I think a part of me thought it was accessible, which it is, but I realized that that's not my story. And I was in a unique position. I am in a unique position as a person of color, as an Asian American, to write about that different perspective. So when I changed the ethnicities of the character, the story completely opened so many different doors that I hadn't considered previously. And from there, I thought more about the app and someone who works there, because the original story didn't really get to go into that because it was only 40 pages long. And so reverse engineering an app company was kind of a fun challenge.
Jeremy, so you wrote yourself into the comic, I think, right? Am I correct on that?
Okay, that is correct.
I want to confirm that's the same Jeremy Holt. And in, I don't think I'm giving away too much when I say a certain comic gets adapted into a Netflix show, which made me think, okay, what if Virtually Yours gets adapted into a Netflix TV series? If so, in that scene, will they call it a Netflix deal, or will they change the name of Netflix to, like, you know, Fitflix or something else?
They'll have to, because it's like Ready Player One. Like, they couldn't reference Steven Spielberg directly, even though he has an influence on all of that story.
Yes.
So it's an interesting dilemma because he's directing it. So
right.
I actually haven't thought about that. And when Elizabeth and I were working on this, we're not thinking about adaptations, but that's an interesting dilemma.
I could see it happening. I could see Netflix picking this up.
It's funny because that scene in particular, Southern Dog was the first comic I had published through Action Lab back in 2013. And a couple of my friends read that scene and said, wait, is this like this, like the soft announcement that Southern Dog has been optioned?
That's funny.
I was like, oh God, I wish. No, not quite.
Speaking of other media, what other books, movies, TV shows, etc., informed the making of Virtually Yours, both narratively and visually?
Let's start with the visuals.
Oh, no.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
I know. It's like, I don't do good with on-spot questions. I mean, I don't know, honestly. Like, I just, movie-wise, it's like you have, like, 50 First Dates, Made in Manhattan, like, Sweet Home Alabama. Those are, like, really good rom-coms to get into. And then visually, I don't know, honestly.
I mean, you're like, Elizabeth's attention to detail is unparalleled. And I would tell people very vaguely about what we were working on. And I'd say, you all are not ready. The detail she puts in this book. And I kept telling Comixology, like, you're not ready. You're not. And when they saw it, they were like, whoa, we were not ready. So something that I continue to marvel at visually is I had some very somewhat specific reference images for the character, for Max and Ava, as far as what they wear and what their looks were. Sure. But that was it. So the fact that Elizabeth not only dressed these characters for multiple seasons and made them look stylish, like in current standards, but she dressed everybody, including extras and people walking their dogs. And it's just incredible. Like it's just one of these books that you're going to read the story, but you got to go back and just stare at the art.
The costuming is really great. I love like just like there are pleated pants on a character that isn't even like an important character in that shot, but it looks so realistic. It just adds to the realism of the scene. But yeah, are you looking through magazines or how do you get references for clothes?
Oh man, I'm like always online, just like Forever 21, ASOS, like just looking at Target, just like anything. And I just love fashion in general. So it's like getting to do that as part of my research and then just making like Pinterest boards and just like, okay, this is Ava's board. It's like, okay, now I got Katie.
Oh, that's
like,
cool.
But like, it's like just trying to, cause like everyone's an individual and it's like, you should be treating them that way. And so like, when you just look at everyone, it's, you kind of nail it down. And I just love doing that. And hopefully it doesn't get too dated style-wise in the future.
Yeah, I mean, that's a literal style guide.
Yeah. Makes me think of how some writers have mood boards. Mm-hmm. Maybe some artists have costume boards, I guess.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah. And as far as the story goes, you know, I'm a huge fan of Nora Ephron, Nancy Myers, Richard Curtis. Grew up on all of their movies. But one filmmaker in particular, Jennifer Caton Robinson, who directed Netflix original film Someone Great, transformed my perspective on writing this story and was a direct influence on me changing a lot of the plot and the characters, because in Someone Great, it's really not about a love story. It's about how do you survive falling out of love, and it's about friendship, and it's about New York City, and it's about music, and it's about how music is a form of time travel, like, and specific locations are time travel. And she didn't just pick poppy songs to make a fun soundtrack later. She used the songs as part of the narrative of this woman's life surviving a breakup. And I thought, I want to try to write about all the things outside of the cloud nine honeymoon phase of a relationship, because that is great and that's amazing to be in. And most rom-coms try to stay within that sphere, but there's the rest of life. And a lot of people fall out of relationships. A lot of people, you know, are heartbroken, don't want to date, or were burned by an ex-spouse or a toxic relationship. And it's difficult. And I kind of wanted to try to explore those things without getting too dark and sad about it.
Right. Right. Give us just like a kind of a taste of it. I got that from the book, I think. Can I ask you about the app itself? I'm not sure it's ever explained, but if you were to order roses for your, I think you're technically right, ordering them for yourself, do you pay for those roses?
Yep. Wow. Everything is through the app.
So it's an expensive app.
Yes, it's an expensive app. And, you know, I was thinking about confidentiality, anonymity, security. And so I had read something somewhere about somebody or a group of people had created this selfie bank where all the selfies on this website, and you could just click next through these images, were all computer generated. And they were so real, I thought, this is the best way to protect one's identity, both for the user and the employee. And everybody has fake names, because to me, it seems like the breach of security is if somebody takes it too far and starts essentially stalking somebody, which I think could be a potential problem. And I think if you make everything randomized and anonymous, it's almost impossible. Mm. And yeah, so the person can leave voicemails for you. They can send you flowers. They can send you photos. Just about everything except obviously meeting in person.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Do you have any ideas for expanding the world of Virtually Yours or doing any sequels?
I would only entertain it if Elizabeth was on board to draw it.
Yes.
I guess we haven't really thought about it. I didn't really think about it because I like what people have been sending me messages about as far as the ending and where they think the story would continue on to. Mm-hmm. And I like that Elizabeth and I agreed to make it kind of choose your own adventure kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't want it to be all neatly wrapped up because I don't think that's how life works. And also, I wanted to do a commentary on the importance of friendship and how good relationships stem from a solid friendship base.
Mm. Yeah, you get that from the book for sure.
Shifting gears just a little bit, because we like to get the insight into what led to the eventual product. What did both of you want to be when you were little?
Oh, God, a paleontologist.
Nice.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow, that's awesome.
I love dinosaurs.
I wanted to be in the NBA.
Okay.
Nice. What position?
Both.
I knew I wasn't going to be very tall, so a point guard, I guess.
Gotcha. Who did you like growing up?
David Robinson, 100%.
Nice. Did you grow up in the San Antonio area?
No, actually, I grew up mostly overseas. I had to watch NBA games at like 2 a.m. because I lived in Singapore as a kid. But the NBA is so huge. I mean, like in Asia specifically, everybody just sees America as the NBA. The NBA is the embodiment of America because it's really the only thing that makes it across to these countries. And the visibility is very high and it's, you know, everybody loves this sport, generally speaking. So, I grew up on that, and like collecting basketball cards was like an obsession of me and my brothers. So, yeah.
Okay. What comics are you guys reading right now?
I'm catching up on stuff, honestly.
Are you reading anything right now, Elizabeth?
Am I what now?
Are you reading anything right now? Like in the past week or so?
No, I got a stack of stuff in the mail, but I haven't touched it yet. I got Black Mage in the mail. I got Eat and Love Yourself, which I saw that you got that too.
Yes, that's the one I'm reading, Sweeney Boo.
Yeah. I also got Silver Surfer Black. I've had that.
Oh, it's so great.
Yeah, visually stunning.
On the floppies, and then I went ahead and ordered the big boy. So
the Treasury edition. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Absorb Trad's work and just like assimilate somehow. I don't know.
we're both friends with Trad. Elizabeth went to, well, we all went to the same college. Just
yeah.
Elizabeth and Trad went to SCAD at the same time. I went to SCAD maybe just, I think I was graduating when you were coming in as a freshman. I
transferred in, oh my God, I don't remember when. I graduated in 2011.
Okay, so I graduated in 2005, so definitely missed each other.
Okay, yeah. Especially with transferring in, I missed a few years. But that, I think I have like a backlog of Snot Girl and some other stuff I need to catch
also
up.
Also great.
Nice.
I've just been like getting a lot of stuff and not really keeping up with it this past year.
Do you find yourself reading a lot of other comics while you're working on a book, or do you kind of do those in different phases?
Probably, it's hard because I love just absorbing new media, especially like different like programs and stuff and comics and just any type of art magazines and stuff. But I find it so hard to focus on what I need to work on if I have something new to look at, if that makes sense. Like, it's distracting to me. But if it's just like little snips, like if I'm on Twitter or Tumblr or something and I see something, I'm like, oh my God, that's so beautiful. It's like, I could take that second to do it. But if I'm like committing a lot of time, that kind of pulls me away from the work I need to be doing, sadly.
Yeah, I think for me, I would, I definitely immerse myself in what I call research, which just watching movies, basically. So when I was revising this, and I came across someone great, I just changed a lot. And I've done a couple books with the publisher Inside Comics, and my editor there, Mark Irwin. I sent him the original or the current outline for what essentially is what people are reading, but he had some really good notes, and more specifically, I tend to be too kind to my characters. I don't let them fall. So that was really informative. And I went back and just rethought about, like, I can't have all these people have, you know, good things happen to them, or like no bad things happen. So conflict needed to be there. So that was a really great note, because I was just so focused on making it light and fun. And, you know, you kind of forget about conflict when you do that.
Guy, I wonder, is it a tax write-off, all the movies and comics you guys can read for research?
I'm sure you spend enough.
Yeah, that's true. You spend like thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
There's a threshold there.
So I had a quick question about, I guess for Jeremy in particular, you said that this book had existed in some other formats and been pitched to different publishers. Do you find when you repitch a product, or when you shift it to maybe for Comixology, that you find a new meaning or a new insight in your work, something that you made but didn't see before?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm going to say probably not, if I'm being honest. I have reworked just about every single book that I have either published or have gotten published or is in the process of being published, has taken a minimum of three, typically five, upwards of 10 years to finally see print. So,
wow.
And a lot of false starts. So, I mean, I have like three projects that have gone through like two or three different publishers at any given time. I think that really it's just finding an artist, if the original one is booked up. And I think specifically, I guess to answer that question more directly, in 2017, I decided to stop writing white male cis protagonists. So that I looked at everything that all the pitches I've done with completed art with collaborators, and I decided, oh, I think I can change the protagonist here. And oh, I think I can do it here as well. And once I started doing that, I thought, oh, wait, there's a whole aspect of this character I can explore now because they're not white.
Right.
So, yeah, absolutely. I think 2017 was a really informative year for me creatively.
Do you generally like the pitch process when it comes to
getting your works to... I've learned to like it. It's like,
yeah.
Like, you know, it's pain is pleasure, pleasure is pain kind of thing.
Yeah.
I've just gotten so used to rejection that I've been able to process it pretty well now. I think initially, you know, anybody starting out, you take everything very personally because it's an intimate thing you're doing. You're really being vulnerable and showing something that is coming out of your heart. And I've just come to realize that, you know, the reality of comics is that comics aren't going to love you. You just got to do it for you. And if you focus on your personal truths, which is this story is very much, very much personal truths for me, I realized that that's what people resonate with. I stopped a long time ago trying to write for an audience, and I started writing for myself, and I found so much more success publishing wise since doing that.
Right. You can like hammer into a joy and an understanding, when you kind of write for yourself. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I think that my misconception early on was that, oh, no one's going to care about my story. Like it's my personal experience Who's going to care about it? But I realized that if you tell your personal truths, a lot of people share in those truths in some form, and that's what they resonate with. If I'm trying to manufacture something, it's going to come across as such.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's almost like, I don't want to write about myself. I don't want to be selfish or something like that, but it's the exact opposite in a sense. Because I guess as human beings, we're all just trying to share in this experience on this crazy rock that's floating through space.
Definitely. 100%.
So we always end the show with Off Topic Top Shelf. This is where we ask you something not comics related about what you're into that's not comics. So it could be anything like a show or a book or food or cooking, anything.
Ooh.
Oh, my.
What am I obsessed with right now? do you have something, Elizabeth? Because I'm thinking.
I'll touch on a few things. Okay, so I'm been watching BuzzFeed Unsolved right now. I just have that running in the background. I haven't seen it before, so it's really good.
Oh, it's so great.
It's so...
Yeah, it's real good. Are you watching the true crime ones or the supernatural ones?
All of them.
Okay,
just great. All of them. I love baking in general. Mm. Baking and cooking. Like pumpkin bread's usually my go-to. Let's see. I love Gentleman Jack, the HBO show, or original series, I should say. If you haven't seen it, it came out last year. Yeah. I pretty much watched it every single day when I was working on this project.
Nice.
It's one of those things where it's like, maybe like, I think it's like 6 or 8 episodes, but you could watch it in one day.
Nice.
And it's amazing. I love it. The acting is amazing. I think that's it.
That's good choices.
Did I give you enough time, Jeremy?
Yes. Really good. Those all sound great. I'm gonna need to text you later because I wanna remember what those things are. I'd say that I was very obsessed with the show Devs on Hulu.
Oh yeah,
which is Alex Garland's new show. I'm obsessed with anything Alex Garland has made, and it's masterclass in pacing, story, characterization, plot. Production value is extremely high. If anyone's seen his film Ex Machina, if you love that film, this is that basically extended into like an 8-9 episode television series that explores quantum computing. Outside of that, I've been obsessed with the Nintendo Switch and Animal Crossing.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
I've totally fallen into that. Thanks to my friend Susan. Shout out to my friend Susan, who was begging me to get it, and I finally did, and I can see that the hype is real.
do you put out the, I don't even know because I don't have it, like the code or whatever? So
no code.
Yeah, yeah. So random folks can kind of join you on your island.
I've done it. You know, other than I think my younger sister, I went to her island and we held hands and watched a concert on her island.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's about it. My girlfriend and I island hop to each other's islands, but that's about it. And I just got some new islanders and I found out. So I befriended this gorilla and I was like, hey, he looks cool. And my friend Susan's like, you need to go look at other islanders and see who you think are cool and invite them. So I was like, hey, I invited this gorilla. And she's like, no, you didn't. I said, yeah, why? Oh, do you read the boards? I was like, he's a known pervert. I'm like, what?
Oh, no.
I know the gorilla.
What?
Like, what do you mean? She's like, he stands in people's windows and watches them. I was like, what? I was like, so good luck getting him off your island. I'm like, oh my God.
Get out of here.
Holy crap.
Such a wholesome game. And it's turned so dark.
Yeah. So I went over to his house and he's sweeping the floors and he's talking about releasing all his bugs. And I'm just like, what? I was like, oh my God, this is a mistake.
For some reason, this is making me actually want to play it more than ever.
My wife got a character, an islander, that goes for a couple $1,000s on eBay, or did right when the game came out. And it was a real crisis of faith for her whether or not she was going to keep him or try to sell him.
You can sell what?
Yeah, because you can force a villager into moving off your island by being mean to them.
Yep.
I'm doing that with the gorilla. And then someone else can come to your island, like a friend, and talk to them, and the villager will say, I'm moving. Can I come to your island?
Yes.
And you can actually sell it for that much money? Yes. Like real dollars?
Yes. Yeah, there's two characters in particular that were going for a couple thousand on eBay, at least like launch week.
So you get you get money to be mean to someone. That's awful.
Yeah, that's a bad message.
Yes.
Oh, man. Wow. Well, that's the end of our show, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time. Virtually Yours is out on Comixology. Jeremy Holt, Elizabeth Beals, thank you so much.
Thank you.